Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for John Williams today. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. Thank you so much for joining us here. We have a big show for you today, a lot of news, a lot of really interesting conversations to have. So let's start with some of the news that's up today. We have workers quitting jobs at record levels. Last month, a record 4.3 million people quit their jobs. Were you one of them? Give us a call, send us a text, let us know. We would love to know if you quit and why. And people are quitting. It's known as the Great Resignation. There's been speculation that people are quitting because they know they're going to get a new job very quickly or easily, or at least they suspect that they will. Or they're quitting because they just feel like they're not getting what they need, whether it's financial or flexibility, which is a huge thing. But employment is, people are out there and they're looking. The number of vacancies is at 10.5 million, which is a little bit down from what had been expected. So about 50% of people are looking to make a career change. This is also a record number. So according to the Labor Department's most recent job openings and labor turnover survey, 4 million Americans are quitting their jobs each month. That's called the Great Resignation. But the question is, why are they quitting? Why are people out there deciding that it's better that they leave? And so one of the reasons, again, is financial. You know, people think that they can get more money elsewhere. They're seeing stories about that. But they're also saying that their employers don't understand them. They're not empathetic. This is especially true for working parents. They don't feel good about the experience of working for someone who's not as empathetic as they would like and is not offering the kind of flexibility. 41% of those surveyed say they're leaving their job because the company doesn't care about their concerns during the pandemic. And 76% say they want their company to make work permanently flexible in terms of schedule and or location. We saw Amazon talking about that today. They announced that they would be able to make it fully, on you. If you want to work from home, that's fine. They're going to allow people to have that sort of flexibility. Yesterday, we talked with Amy Guth. She'll be stopping by later today, but we talked with her about how Allstate decided to put its huge campus up for sale, citing that more people wanted flexibility and they were going to give the huge majority of their population the ability to work from home. And this, I think, also gives them an opportunity to move back into the city of Chicago and be a little bit more available there. In other news today, Jamie Dimon calling Bitcoin completely worthless. The cryptocurrency is worth over $57,000 right now per Bitcoin. He's not a fan of Bitcoin, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Bitcoin and all of the other cryptocurrencies out there as we start to see the banks around the world and the Fed here in the United States deal with digital currencies. And when you start to look at digital currencies and what people are going to do with them, whether governments are going to adopt Bitcoin, a different cryptocurrency that's existing, or they're going to make their own digital money, I think is still to be determined. But I think that the Fed's made it very clear that they're internally discussing that right now. And they'll have more commentary, I assume, in later this year or next year about it. In other news, and we're going to talk a little bit more about employee benefits coming up, but 17.5 million Americans are leaving free retirement plan money on the table, according to a new survey. The survey contributions to your 401k are, of course, pre-tax. So when you put money in today, it means you pay less in taxes today and you shift any taxes that you owe into the future. But 17% of workers with access to a qualified retirement plan don't currently contribute, which is very interesting. Why don't they contribute? Some people said it's because they couldn't afford to contribute more to the plan. The survey is by Magnify Money. The personal finance site polled more than 1,200 workers, and I think that's it just breaks my heart when I hear this, because this is free money. When a company has a 401k plan and they match your funds That's free money that you get. And so 12% or 17.5 million people are actually not contributing, which is too bad. Retirement account balances took a sharp nosedive last year. That's when people started withdrawing their money from COVID, but now they're back at new highs. Fidelity Investments said that 401k accounts are now at record highs, which is not surprising given where the market is. Maybe not today, but overall the market is near its highs. So you definitely want to take advantage of your 401k. It's a great way to put away money. And then finally, the FDA today said that they do not believe at the moment that Moderna COVID booster shots are the right thing to do. They say that two doses of Moderna COVID booster COVID vaccine are enough to protect against severe disease. Obviously, Moderna was pushing to make a reduced amount of vaccine available as a booster every 6 months. This could cause, obviously, some problems for Moderna and their financial guidance going forward. But for anybody who has a Moderna shot right now and was waiting for the booster, you can count me among that. I guess we'll be waiting a little bit longer. Lisa Greenwald joins us right now. She's the CEO of Greenwald Research, and her firm helped the Employee Benefits Research Institute conduct the 2021 Workplace Wellness Survey. They found that 76% of employees favorably view their employer's efforts to improve their overall well-being. That's a good number. Lisa, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's nice to have you as well. So the Workplace Wellness Survey annually examines workplace attitudes towards employment benefits and also sort of a broad spectrum of financial well-being, employment-based health insurance, retirement benefit issues. These are all things that are crucial to the employee experience and we're seeing now come into play with the so-called Great Resignation. Did the survey find that people are satisfied with their employee benefits?
Yeah, the study conducted by Employee Benefit Research Institute and my firm found yes. In fact, 8 in 10 employees reported being satisfied with their benefits package. That's including half who were extremely or very satisfied and another third who were somewhat satisfied. 6 in 10 were satisfied with their health insurance specifically and their retirement benefits specifically. And those are the two most important benefits, employees told us.
It's sort of interesting that everybody's so satisfied, and yet we're seeing people resign in mass almost because they feel like their employees are not engaged enough with them. Do you feel like there's a disconnect there?
I think the answer, according to our survey, would be it's not the benefits package. There's certainly the old adage of leaving because of a boss or supervisor. I think that could still be the case. But we are also seeing some indication in our research results about the importance of work-life balance, that in fact, employees' assessment of work-life balance at their employers has declined since we last asked it in 2018, pre-pandemic. And I think the pandemic has made employees value work-life balance more. That's something to pay attention to.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has made people more aware that there are things other than, you know, being available 24/7, maybe from by your cell phone. Do you think employees feel that their employer has been more responsive about financial wellness tools since the pandemic? Because our company's research has shown that financial wellness is still the number one requested benefit.
Yeah, I mean, what we see is the most requested, the most valued benefit, also the benefit contributing most to overall feelings of financial security is health insurance and retirement benefits. But employees in our survey provided pretty positive ratings on their employers' efforts to help them improve their overall well-being, as you were saying. About half are rating the employer's efforts specifically to improve their emotional or their mental health well-being positively. About half are rating the employer's efforts to assist with physical well-being or health positively. And about half are saying their employer's efforts to assist with financial well-being is excellent or very good. Now, the share saying it's fair or poor is about 25%, and that's a sizable minority who feel their employer's efforts have been just fair or poor in these areas.
Mm. Do you feel like with COVID, did you ask any COVID-specific questions in the survey of maybe how responsive their employers have been to in the pandemic?
So we asked a variety of questions related to the pandemic. A lot of the questions were, did these things get more important to you? And one of the things that struck me was that paid time off as a benefit got more important to about 3 in 10 employees, more important than it was before. And it is in the top five most important benefits, rounding out the top five. So I think PTO, again, hand in hand with work-life balance, is worth noting.
And are you seeing that PTO or paid time off is now being lumped together with vacation time? So if you got, let's say, a week of I'm sorry, not for paid, but for example, for ill, if you're sick time, what used to be known as sick time. So is everything being rebranded as paid time off, whether it's because you're taking time off because you're sick or because your kids are sick or because you're taking vacation?
I mean, we ask each separately. Some employers still have separate buckets for sick, vacation, and personal. Many employers have moved to a single bucket of paid time off, PTO. But I think the whole category of time off and leave seems to have become more important, and employees' awareness and need for that as it contributes to work-life balance and as it contributes to emotional and mental health well-being, it seems to be heightened.
Now, according to your survey, 8 in 10 employees would use a free option that helps them with making decisions about benefits. What are they actually looking for, do you think?
Selecting the right benefits, truly understanding them, and making the right choices for your household is sometimes, I think, not as easy as we make it out to be. And employees often don't spend a lot of time making these decisions. What we found was 4 in 10 consult with their spouse or partner. That's even though 6 in 10 were married or with a partner.
About a Wait quarter, a second. There's a couple of people who aren't getting consulted there.
Yeah, they're not even including their spouse. A lot of times they think this is a solitary employee-only decision, and it shouldn't be. These are important decisions. We found only a quarter relying on HR, which often will provide information but not advice per se.
Okay.
2 in 10 are using current tools available from the benefits providers, and 2 in 10 say they're using tools their employer provides on their websites, but just as many are Googling to figure out what their benefits should be. And so we have found the Ebre Greenwald Workplace Wellness Survey consistently high interest in an online tool that would help optimize benefit selections.
So interesting. Well, hopefully somebody will invent that coming down the pike. Lisa Greenwald is CEO of Greenwald Research. She worked on the 2021 Workplace Wellness Survey conducted by the Employee Benefit Research Institute. Thank you so much for being with us today, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
312-981-7200 if you've got a question or a comment or the show today. Happy to hear those. Jim Dulkey from ChicagoInno.com joins us now, as he always does. Hi, Jim. How you been?
Hey, Elise. Good. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Glad to have you here. So I know one of the stories that you're following today is on the rise of NFTs and this community of artists, investors, and collectors forming in Chicago. Let's explain, just for everybody playing along at home, what an NFT is, and then tell us a little bit about what's going on here.
Well, sure. So an NFT is a non-fungible token. And, what's kind of exciting about an NFT is that it has a lot of different potential applications across a wide variety of industries, but it's certainly taken hold in the art scene, and there's quite a bit of activity happening in Chicago. But essentially what an NFT does is it allows you to sort of authenticate a digital piece of work, kind of creating, a digital certificate of authenticity. There's quite a bit of energy around Chicago. There's actually a physical museum dedicated to NFTs here in the city as well. Some investor activity is popping up. Certainly an interesting space to follow in the crypto world as there's some early Chicago momentum.
So the thing that I think people don't really understand is, how does value translate with an NFT? I know this is a question that I've struggled with a little bit, because it feels like almost anything can be turned into an NFT and suddenly it's worth a lot of money, and yet that could be easily duplicated. Do you have any insight to that?
Well, you know, an NFT is worth what anyone's willing to pay for it at the moment. We're at these very early stages where I think we're still trying to really sort out what is the true value of this. You know, but one thing that's really interesting about NFTs to me is that the original artist can earn royalties on their piece each time the NFT is bought and sold, which is really innovative, I think, and allows the original artist to continue earning income and money on their pieces, even when a piece is sold on the secondary market, because of that, that digital tracking and that digital authenticity piece that we talked about. So I think that has, big ramifications and could, get a lot of people, shift a lot of focus into digital art, assuming artists can continue to earn money on their pieces as they're sold for years to come.
Yeah, I think that is a really interesting idea, finding a way for letting artists to continue to profit from it, much the way that a songwriter is able to continue to profit from the sale of a song. All right, let's look at some of the other stuff going on. Apparently, $25 million is going to fund a new institute at University of Chicago. What's that about?
There's a lot of momentum happening in the quantum space as well. We talk about quantum technology in Chicago. It is really kind of this growing space there's a really specific niche of technology here in the city. So it's going to be a new quantum institute, really kind of focused on that. You know, there's a lot of momentum in Chicago around this space, especially with a group called Duality, which is an accelerator for quantum technology. They're really the first accelerator for quantum in the city of Chicago. And they've got a local startup here in the city called Super.Tech, which is a really kind of fast and up-and-coming startup here in the city that's focused on quantum tech. And what quantum is going to allow us to do is really kind of take computing to the next level and really supercharge what we're able to do with computers and with technology. And Chicago's kind of starting to be a little bit of a burgeoning hub here. So some exciting quantum technology momentum here in the city.
That's great. And Melinda Gates is also working on a way to boost women in tech here in Chicago as well.
She is. You know, anytime we can work Melinda Gates into the news here, it's certainly very exciting. And so she has launched a group called All Raise in Chicago, which is aiming to boost women in tech. It's backed by her venture firm, Pivotal Ventures. And so, All Raise is a group that's launched in the Valley, but they've launched a Chicago chapter here, kind of focused on gender equity in tech and, making sure that men aren't the only ones that are benefiting from the fast growth we're seeing, especially in Chicago. There's the kind of record amounts of venture capital activity happening here. So, All Raise, really interesting group. They're going to work on providing mentoring and events and other resources to help women founders get more funding.
Yeah, it is really wonderful to see so much focus going in on women in technology. It's also great to see the different universities that are backing technology and investing in it to the benefit of not just their students, but the surrounding area, the larger metropolitan area, and then their own neighborhoods as well. And finally, you've got a story about a startup's affordable bionic hand hitting the market. Tell us about that.
It's interesting. We write a lot about startups in Chicago, and it typically focuses on software, business software, logistics tech, fintech. So it's great when we get to write about somebody working on a bionic hand, and that's exactly what's happening with Psionic. Our startup developed out of the University of Illinois, and they've created a high-tech prosthesis that provides sensory feedback to its users. The device uses sensors that are embedded in the fingertips of the hand. So when the user touches an object, the skin is stimulated electronically, giving off the tingling or vibration sensation. So it really kind of lets the wearer, quote unquote, feel what they're touching with this bionic hand. And so the startup's product is officially on the market after several years of R&D, and a pretty big milestone for a startup that's got the potential for a pretty big impact.
It's pretty amazing. There are so many people who have, you know, they lose a hand or they've got, you know, issues with their hands. And it's amazing to see that this technology can really go places. I'm always interested in watching like the Boston, what is that Boston robot? Is it Boston Robotics? Boston Robots, where they seem to be just developing this kind of technology in leaps and bounds where bionic hands or robotic hands can actually grip and pick up things now. Whereas before it just wasn't the ability to do that on kind of a smaller micro level just wasn't there. I think those of us not in robotics underestimate just how hard it is to get something like this working and then have it work on impulses to do what you want it to do. It's just astounding technology.
It really is, yeah, and it's a little less, the University of Illinois startup, a little less dystopian than the Boston Dynamics robot dogs that are
equal. Oh, that's what I'm thinking of, Boston Dynamics.
Creepy as well, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, Jim Dahlke, thank you so much for being with us. Jim is with ChicagoInno.com. You can find more information about these stories and others at ChicagoInno.com. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Elise.
Okay, 43 minutes past the hour. Here's Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The co-founder of Chicago's Grubhub is leaving the company he founded two decades ago. Cranes reports Matt Maloney is departing after a disagreement about the direction of the company. Amsterdam-based Just Eat Takeaway acquired Grubhub back in June for $7.3 billion. Maloney, who helped launch the online ordering and delivery industry with Grubhub, joined the new company's management board after the takeover. It's unclear what the disagreement is about. Grubhub employs about 1,000 workers in Chicago. The biggest investor in R.R. Donnelley wants to acquire the outstanding shares of the company it doesn't already own. Chatham Asset Management says it'll pay $7.50 a share for the Chicago-based printing and information services company. That's a 52% premium to its closing price on Monday. The deal would value Donnelley at about $546 million. R.R. Donnelley has 30,000 clients and 33,000 employees in 28 different countries. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander with the Business of Food.
If you happen to see a farmer today, give him or her a hug. With permission, of course, because it's National Farmers Day. Another opportunity to remind you that without farmers, without agriculture, you would be hungry, homeless, naked, and sober. It is our most essential industry. Continuing today with the question, are the uber-popular carbonated waters like Bubbly and LaCroix and others good for you? And in particular today, are they good for your teeth? Here's somebody who knows.
Dr. Amar Patani at Main Street Smiles in Barrington.
Okay, Dr. Patani, I was thinking all of that fizz can't be that great for your choppers. Am I right?
I think it helps to understand the background of what happens when this water enters your mouth. What you're drinking is water infused with carbon dioxide. When water and carbon dioxide come together, they form an acid called carbonic acid. So as far as level of acidity, it's between a 5 and a 6 on the pH scale, which puts it somewhere in between like apple juice and orange juice. So acid in your mouth is basically the pathway towards cavities. It basically makes your teeth weaker and allows cavities to form.
Oh, no. But he says we have a superhero on our side, saliva.
When you drink a can of soda, immediately you are also producing saliva that's then countering the effects of the acid. But if you drink soda throughout the day or carbonated water throughout the day, you are reattacking the surfaces of your teeth constantly. And so your body can't keep up with it. But if you have a carbonated beverage or a carbonated water a few times a day, especially if you have them with meals when we're already producing more saliva, then there shouldn't really be a problem.
And one other issue with the fizzy water, Dr. Patani says it doesn't have fluoride.
So if you were getting your entire water supply from carbonated water, then you would want to make sure that you're introducing fluoride into your mouth from another source. You know, toothpaste, fluoride mouthwashes. And even fluoride tablets.
Thank you, Dr. Amar Patani. Today is National Gumbo Day. Enjoy, but be sure and brush afterwards. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on the line. Hey, Amy, how are things going today?
Great. How are you today?
Things are good. So, a lot of news. I have to start with the thing that I think is the most ridiculous, which is that Elon Musk is trolling Jeff Bezos about not being the wealthiest person in the world. Aren't these guys worth like $200 billion each with a B?
That's exactly right. And I feel like once you're worth over a billion, you're good. You know, just leave it alone. You're fine. You're doing okay. You're better than the rest of us. So indeed, Elon Musk, his personal wealth is now $222 billion. So that makes him now the richest person on the face of the earth, according to Bloomberg's Billionaires Index. That is a spot held by Jeff Bezos for a very long time. But Musk's personal wealth came up an extra $10.6 billion after a secondary share sale by investors that valued SpaceX at over $100 billion, that was first reported by CNBC. So then again, Jeff Bezos, his personal net worth is $191.6 billion. Apples and oranges here at this point. You know what I mean? Like it's so close. Like it's you know, ridiculously close. However, Jeff Bezos tweeted on Sunday this, you know, a very nice tweet. He said, listen and be open, but don't let anyone tell you who you are. This was just one of the many stories telling us all the ways we were going to fail. But today, Amazon is one of the world's most successful companies. And he linked to an old story about Amazon that was kind of casting some doubt on it. That was in Barron's in May of 1999. So he, you know, he was offering some perspective of, look, there were doubters. Don't let anyone throw your, you know, tell you, you know, you can't do it and wreck your dreams, all this. To which Elon Musk replied with a second place medal. It was like so ridiculous, but it was, you know, and petty. But here, all this is kind of playing out on the backdrop of this billionaire space race, right? The two of them and Richard Branson are obviously competing to see who's going to kind of win space and win that market share of space. Now, Jeff Bezos might very well have a leg up tomorrow, because tomorrow morning, William Shatner is expected to go into space about 8:30 our time, 8:30 in the morning, on Blue Origin, which is one of Jeff Bezos' companies. So It's all kind of, again, you're exactly right. Like, ridiculous is the word. We're kind of like billionaires squaring off in space and now fighting over who's the richest person on Earth when, you know, there's so many people that are struggling so much and that go without. So nonetheless, though, that is what's happening today, is that Elon Musk is trolling Jeff Bezos on Twitter.
I just feel like there must be better things for them to be doing than trolling each other. But, you know, this is, I think this culture, this, I'm going to call it a bro culture. It's hard to imagine two women trolling each other in the same way. But perhaps I'm wrong about this. All right. Well, let's move into something a little bit less insane. Best Buy is going into healthcare. I did mean less crazy, right?
Right, exactly. I know. I read that and went, wait, clearly there's a typo. This can't be right. But indeed, CNBC was reporting earlier today that Best Buy is pushing into the healthcare sector. They already have a little bit of a hold there that I don't think is widely known. They're acquiring a company called Current Health. And Current Health, its technology allows healthcare organizations to kind of monitor patients at home. So that could be biosensors, like wearable devices. And it would give your doctor a heads up if you have a medical condition, like, hey, you know, your heart rate is not quite stable. Let's get you in for a checkup, you know, things like that. So Best Buy's position here is, who better than us? We have been well positioned for a very long time to outfit homes with the latest technology and make it very user friendly. So when you kind of put it that way, it sort of makes sense. But this is not their first foray, as I said. They have previously been involved with a company called Great Call. They bought that for $800 million in 2018, and they make easy to use cell phones and connected health devices and kind of emergency response services for aging seniors. But this kind of adds to that. And it's all really about wearables and kind of that aging at home movement of less people interested in going into a nursing home, more people wanting to use technology in order to age at home and remain and keep their independence.
Yeah, that is interesting when you frame it like that. And what it makes me think about are all the strategy people inside big companies trying to plot out the next moves. And when you think about that, and you think about how Amazon had, you know, moved into healthcare is moving into healthcare, that there is this huge pot of gold that companies see. I mean, obviously, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos are seeing it out in the universe, but, you know, here on planet Earth, healthcare remains next to salaries, the largest expense that companies have. And there is just so much, as all of us are aging in this world, there's just so much more focus on that. Plus, you've got all the pandemic money that is out there. So it's not surprising that a company like Best Buy, which has struggled so much over the last 10 years, is looking for a new out.
That's exactly right. And with, you know, when I first kind of read about this, I thought, well, that doesn't really connect. But then once you kind of see the way they framed it, it does make sense, especially the way that people of all ages have been embracing wearable technology. So many people have Fitbits and Apple Watches that, you know, have heart monitors and look at their data. How many steps did I get today? You know, so many people are using technology to manage their health that Best Buy feels like this is a great way to diversify their revenue streams.
Well, we all know that Build-A-Bear is going to pretty soon be able to provide all that technology and the interface for you. It'll light up when your senior's not doing well. Amy Guth, thank you so much, as always, for all the information.
Thanks so much, Elise. Have a great day.